Working with you all, I think it's helped to focus our effort a little bit. We had over half of the aviation department involved in it, and less than a quorum of the board, so that they were not public meetings, and we were free to have open discussions and plan the future here, if you will. So thanks for all your work, Michelle.
I appreciate it. Thank you. So starting just with the general timeline, when we do strategic planning, we like to think about it in three phases. So it's about getting clear, getting focused, and getting moving. Today, we're actually at the final step of the get focused. So while there will be a motion for an action today, our work with the department isn't done. When we started the project at the early part of 2017, we started with an organizational assessment, which really is shorthand for saying, like, what's the current state? So we partnered with members of the board, with the staff, and did a variety of different types of outreach, interviews, focus groups, surveys to help inform a current state. We developed what we call an insider report, which is basically saying this is what we heard, these are the perceptions that are out there. In July, we facilitated a two-day retreat with members of the board and staff as kind of the initial guidance into this planning process. From there, again, as Martha alluded, beginning in September, I believe, was our first session. We had a series of strategic work sessions and was saying, given what Rosario learned, given what we heard from the board and staff in the summer, we started to fine-tune the plan, which is up to today, which we'll present the one major. Following today's meeting, we shift from approving a five-year document to saying, what does this look like operationally for the next 12 to 18 months? So we'll be setting meetings and working with Mitch and his team to say, for each of these initiatives or special projects, who's going to own it, what's going to look like, what's the work that's required, and what are the implications on other things that are just day-to-day operations for the department. So that's our job. So we're kind of three-quarters of the way through. Any questions before I move on? I'm realizing, as I was told, this is a very sensitive question. So I'll just give a brief orientation to our framework. For those of us who get involved in a lot of different strategic plans, some of these things may look familiar. This is the framework that we use at Paragio. So we think about it in terms of clarity, focus, and action. So when you see the draft in a moment, you'll see these five elements. We think of these as strategic anchors. These are things that as an organization that you would visit or refine like every single year. These are things that within any given planning cycle, say 5 years as it is for the department, we say you want to kind of go back to it and say, hey, does this vision still make sense? Does this mission make sense? And it might be yes, and you check the box and move on, or you might consider revisions. So what we did is we started with some of the things that were in place with the department. Vision for us is more aspirational, so we're not looking out 5 years. We're saying 10, 20 years out. When we did it, we were looking at 2027 and the exercise in the summer. So again, when we're thinking about vision too, we're thinking about bigger than the Department of Aviation. So we're thinking about a future that suggests some kind of a transformational collective effort. Mission is really the purpose. What's the purpose of the Department of Aviation in service to this greater vision that we've identified? The three remaining items here are values, reputation, and position. Values, some organizations call it organizational values, but it's really the word or ideas that guide your actions, your thinking as an organization. So we had an opportunity to draft those that didn't exist previously, and we developed those in partnership with the planning team and staff. Reputation and position work together. Reputation is what do you want to be known for outside the walls of the department. So when you think of the variety of customers, stakeholders the department serves, you know, be capital C citizens of the state of Oregon, but also the different stakeholder groups. You know, what are those words that you want to be known for? And then position is, within the world of aviation, within our state, what is unique and sustainable in terms of the programs and services that the Department of Aviation provides? So it really forced us to think through, given everything else, everyone else that provides like or similar services, what's at the end of the day, what's truly unique when it comes to the aviation department. So that's our strategic clarity. When we get the focus in action, this is where we start to say, now we want to look at the next 5 years. We start with imperatives. So the imperatives are, if you're at a board meeting like this, and if you're, as we would suggest, you would have reports on our progress against your strategic plan, you're going to say, hey, for each of these five imperatives, how are we tracking? So these are the things the department believes that you must accomplish over the next 5 years. Within that, you're going to have an objective, which is a measure. So how do we know if we're tracking? You know, are we making progress? And then under those, we have the initiatives, which as I already mentioned, these would be special projects that are in support of each of the imperatives. So that's the framework that we use. And I recognize that this is small, so apologies, so I'll do some reading. This is the draft plan. I guess just as a point of question, this is in the materials.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's in tab 11 in your
handout. Thank you very much. Tab 11. So, again, 5-year strategic plan. So, my goal here is I'll give you a brief orientation to this, and then we'll open up to any questions. And as we're doing it, I think to mark this point about the broad level of engagement, I encourage members of the board and staff that there's important background on how we got to certain things that would be helpful to bring this forward. Across the top, we have vision. So the vision that we identified was an integrated aviation system benefiting all Oregonians. The mission, which is the aviation department's service to that vision, is to provide infrastructure, financial resources, and expertise to ensure a safe and efficient air transportation system. The values, customer service, collaboration, integrity, passion, and healthy relationships, and the reputation, again, this is what we want to be known for. Is knowledge, we're knowledgeable, we're proactive, we're solutions-oriented, dedicated, and trustworthy. The position statement is that ODA is the state's aviation specialist providing airport management and operations of state airports, leadership that connects communities and the state, advocacy for airports, pilots, and aviation-related businesses, facilitation of state and federal aviation funding programs, and oversight of aviation policy and assets as part of the emergency management system. So that's the strategic clarity line, again, those strategic anchors. I think one of the things that was interesting in just our conversations with the team is that once we were able to get to a vision and mission pretty quickly, And I think the conversation around values, reputation, in particular position, were really important. Because when you are really clear on what your unique and sustainable value is, what you believe it to be and want it to be, sometimes there's a little bit of aspiration in there that really becomes a driver for the focus of your work. And we also recognize that there are just certain things that are mandated through policy based on the nature of the work of the Department of Aviation. So before I move on to the other elements, any questions about anything in terms of the drafts or on strategic clarity?
Yes, I know you had some thoughts on the financial piece that we presented a couple months back. I hope we scratched that itch.
Sorry, I missed that question.
You had recently, on some of the verbiage we had on the financial, if you take down ensure a fiscally stable agency, there's some language in there a couple months back that you wanted us to clean up about things we listed first and things we prioritized. Just want to make sure that that we've met, we've answered what we said.
Yeah,
because
I looked at that.
That's
good.
Okay. So just any of the staff have any inputs that are part of the process?
Again, this is mainly, we're just going to start at this clarity line before we get into the details of the measures. Just any additional context is helpful. I'm going to move on. The blue section on the lower two-thirds of the slide are focused on your next 5 years. So again, the sequence says these are the imperatives. So we're saying actually here are the four things we must accomplish within the next 5 years. The objectives, which is how we know whether or not we're succeeding. And then you have initiatives. What are those special projects we're going to undertake? So I'll start with the first one, which is ensuring a financially stable agency. As we look at this, so we're setting the intention we want to ensure a financial stable agency. And the way that we're going to track or measure success is we're going to look at sustainable funding, we're going to look at a ratio of revenues to expenditures, and then we're also going to look at baselining and increasing the number of new financial partnerships. And we believe through a combination of those three things that those are really going to drive progress against ensuring sustainability or stable agency funding. The initiatives that we've developed in support of these are identifying and cultivating financial partnerships that align with departmental goals and strengthen overall funding, create and maintain flexible central services through legislation, advocate for the sustainability of long-term core agency funding streams, and develop solidified internal controls for financial expenditures and revenues. So one thing that I'll maybe take a moment to call out kind of the function of the strategic plan is that we're, through this work, we're identifying that we believe rise above and beyond the day-to-day operations of the agency. These are things that we're calling out as specific areas of focus for the next 5 years. So that's the first imperative. Any questions in terms of just the content of what this means? All right, second one. Provide proactive oversight of Oregon's aviation system. Again, the measures or the objectives, the way that we're going to know whether or not we're successful, we're looking at increasing the percentage of aviation projects funded through bi-state grants. We're going to baseline and increase number of support engagement visits beyond required inspections. The background on there is that we talk a little bit about the importance of the face-to-face interactions and really looking at it as a focal area to drive this imperative. The third then is a baseline and increase statewide economic impact for airports. I'm sure not a new question to come up, but really recognizing if you look at whether it's in a rural community or anywhere in the state, what's the business case, the economic impact of the airport in that locality, and what role should the department play in helping shine a light on that. Initiatives are evaluating optimizing agency controlled assets, pursue and expand sustainable funding for current and future aviation programs, develop and complete an economic impact study, strengthen aviation integration into Oregon's emergency management system, and update Oregon's aviation plan. So that's the work that we have drafted under the second imperative. Question or comments on those? Third imperative, increase advocacy and awareness for state aviation. I would say that this was one of the things when you're looking at kind of gap in terms of kind of current state and future state, just building awareness, even for folks kind of quote unquote in the family, was a huge area of opportunity, something that we learned through the Insight Report. So what we're saying in terms of effectives is baseline and increased stakeholder satisfaction and response rate, and then marketing and communications plan launched. Sometimes when we're doing objectives, it's not necessarily measuring progress of something, it's actually just accomplishing an activity. So this one's the example where we're just recognizing that the department hasn't had a plan like this in the past, and it's really significant and important effort, so we wanted to call it out specifically to say not only did they develop it, but they launched the plan. Under the initiatives, we have developed and implemented a marketing communications plan, cultivate industry partnerships to strengthen aviation messaging and lobbying, and then to evolve and utilize key metrics as a tool to communicate progress. So it's kind of that mix of, I can come up here, and I'm sure many of you in the room, you can tell a personal story on why aviation is important, why this work is important, and then you can have the companion data to help back up or strengthen the case that you're making for whatever audience you're in front of. So any questions about the third imperative? Fourth imperative. Fourth imperative is more internally focused. So when we do plans, oftentimes, because it's kind of the core of the work, is a lot of the work's externally focused. And we always encourage clients that we're working with to really look internally, make sure you have something focused on staff, or in this case, staff and board. So that said, the fourth imperative is pursue agency operational excellence. Objectives are baseline and grow customer satisfaction rates, baseline and grow staff board engagement, and then administrative compliance updated. So similar to the marketing communications plan, that last one is just saying that, hey, we've accomplished this, you know, this activity. The initiatives under this are creating and inviting a fun office environment, enhancing use of tools for internal and external customer outreach in an environment where you don't have unlimited financial resources and you're looking to deepen the quality of engagement, you know, how can we make better use of current or potentially new tools? Strengthen board governance and overall effectiveness. So recognizing this example today is that, you know, it's a partnership and there's a relationship between the board and staff, and collectively that's what's really going to move the work forward. That there's been a lot of new members coming on, and I think there's an interest for increased engagement there, so we want to make sure that that was reflected in the plan. Last two are align internal resources and capacity to match external demand, and then to update internal policies and the OARs. The second to last one, the align internal resources, it may be self-evident to do this, but I think it's really important that when we work in environments where you may, and it will happen, that you're mandated to do new things, sometimes you're told to do something and you don't get the money to do it. So just being mindful, if this is the direction we're setting, that we're developing it, you know, refining that organizational muscle to continually evaluate how and where we're allocating resources. And part of that is also understanding for the future that you're setting, do we have the capabilities we need to deliver on those promises? If not, how are we going to acquire?
Should have been here an hour ago.
It's not scripted. So that's the Cliff Notes version of the strategic direction. I think, depending on any final questions, the next step again is that, assuming that, you know, we have a motion, this is approved, the next step is we then go and we work with Mitch and his team to say, for all of these initiatives, who's going to own it, and we start to actually put past measures and timelines over the next 12 to 18 months, and then create mechanisms to provide report on progress to this group on a regular basis moving forward. Questions?
Let me just add one thing that will also be part of in here is the engagement pieces, and there's a gap that we've all felt in this that the board could do more. And so I respect that, you know, that you guys have more work to do to flesh out who's going to own the particular initiative areas, but we need to be right there with you. So I think everybody here on the board is committed to taking on their share of work on this.
Any other questions or comments? I have one before you make one, but I'm sure. So I would just say from our perspective, I mean, it's been a real privilege, even though our work isn't complete, to be able to partner with the department. I also just wanted to recognize, for those of you who are involved in this, you know, strategic planning is a time commitment. So there was a lot of time and energy dedicated to this, and I think there were a lot of just really a lot of work going into this. So even like one page, there was a lot of sweat equity into this document. And so I just want to just acknowledge everyone who's involved in that process. If you're getting some good.
I want to speak for Mitch, but I really appreciate all the help you gave the board members as we chipped in on this. So.
I think it's a great effort. You know, I didn't always agree with some of the objectives and initiatives. I thought we actually do more than those things, but you've convinced me that it had to be limited in scope. And I actually agree with all the stuff that you have up there now. So thanks for your work.
Okay, with that, any further discussion? All right, well, do I have a motion to approve the Oregon Department of Aviation's one-page strategic plan? First motion is by Mary. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Brian. So with that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Hearing that, please report that the motion has passed. Thank you very much.
Good work.
A lot of work went into that. I know you guys don't see that. Many interesting discussions happening in the same room. Okay, so going on, let's get back to the schedule.
National update.
Okay, all right.
I think we're on number 12, the core update. No, I think mine is not critical. I know we're a little behind, so I can do it at the end if there's time.
Okay. Well, about 3 minutes past.
For the record, this will be the second time that we've bypassed doing your piece. So next time we'll put it first.
Do we need to bypass it? Because we've got the core grants left. What else do we have? And we get an executive session, so it's going to take 10 minutes.
The Oregon Aviation Plan.
How long do you think that's going to take? Because that seemed to be pretty straightforward, the data
there. We have a presentation that the consultant can fill up since then.
Okay.
Schedule 25 minutes. We can probably adjust it a little bit. But this is a big broad overview.
Okay. All right, we'll see how the time goes. I bet if possible, I'd like to hear from him.
Okay.
So while he's teeing that, we're going to do that next?
Whichever you want. We have our homework assignments just choking.
Okay. Why don't we do this? Because the Oregon Aviation Plan is once every 10, 15 years. And I think it's important that we do this in a bite-by-bite way. If you think Mike and Aviation have gotten us off to that kind of a start. This is an update to the 2006 plan. The FAA gave us two funding tranches up to close to $1 million to basically update the aviation plan for the state. This is the modal plan that is part of the Oregon Transportation Plan, the modal aviation plan, and Mike is a key person for this. And so to talk about the two chapters, 2 and 4.
So as he winds up, I got 4 points together, so I just want to make sure. So here's Mike Maynard, Senior Aviation Planner for JAviation. He is the only person for JAviation to update the Oregon Aviation Plan for us. We do have a specific website for the Oregon Aviation Plan. It's going to be the department's website, so you'll see it, and then you'll see the updates. We're going to start populating that shortly as soon as we start getting everything back from the board. One of the things I want to make sure that if you have questions or comments outside of the Oregon Aviation Plan comments that we're requesting from you for specific chapters, please direct them to Heather Mitch, and Heather Mitch will direct them to us to get the answers for you. For the information that you guys have received, the board has received in your packet, the Plan Division is requesting that the board review chapters 2 and 4 and submit any questions or comments back to the staff by the next board meeting on February 13th at the next conference. At that time, staff will give the board additional material or additional aviation plan chapters to review and comment back. The project process for the Oregon Aviation Plan update is going to take place over the next 9 months. At the conclusion of the board's review, the Department of Aviation will publish the entire document for comments from the general public. Once all the comments have been reviewed the board, from the board and the general public, we will then give the entire package back to the board for one final review and adoption of the Oregon Aviation Plan in its entirety, so it's not chapter by chapter. You in it now, you in back, here it is. Everyone said, yep, looks good. At the end of this process, the formal public meeting will incorporate all comments. This document will also be incorporated into the Oregon Transportation System Plan. So this would be part of Goal 12, Transportation. So this will be tied into Oregon Transportation Commission for roads and bridges and rail and boats and airports. So this is a big piece of pie here. Slice of pie for a big piece of pie. So we're starting off a huge undertaking. The FAA's fringe paid us $1 million to work on this, so this is an important project for the department. With that, I'd like to hand it over to Mike Maynard for his update on the Oregon Aviation Plan.
Before you start, one more comment.
Yep.
And that is that the board will approve this plan, and then we will take it to the OTC and have them adopt it as well.
Correct.
Taking it one bite at a time is important because if you wait to the last minute, the document is going to be disappointing.
Yes.
It's going to be monstrous too.
We appreciate this concept. Thank you very much.
Okay, so briefly, today's agenda for our discussion related to the Oregon Aviation Plan. Talk about the key characteristics of a system plan. System planning is different than master planning. Master plan looks at one facility, one airport. Looks at the inventory, the facility requirements, and forecast. We go through a similar process, but we look at the entire system. So some people describe it as like a mini master plan for each airport in your system. That's our team and some initial results, not wading into the weeds too deep, but just have a quick look at some of the results that we've come up with thus far. You've got a copy of chapter 2 and 4, that's the inventory, and then the rules chapter. So we're working on the forecast right now, which is chapter 3. Okay, so working in concert with the staff, Jeff and I were talking almost on a daily basis through the process. Then we huddle, Mitch, Heather, and Kathy join us. We get together about every 2 months and go over materials, go over the direction of the study. GAVIATION is the prime. We do a number of these studies around the country. I've been doing these from the early 90s. We have sub-consultants locally. We have Angela Sanders, who's helping on land use analysis and ordinances. Environmental planning is helping with what we call report cards for the airports. Century West, also local, did the inventory effort over a number of months, and that data to us, and then Elevate Actual is helping us with the GIS. Okay, why do a system plan? Well, the FAA likes these done every 10 years. They incorporate the information into the NIPIUS, also the asset study, we do that comparison. We look at the roles of the airports. Do they need to change? We have 5 categories of airports. We're maintaining the same categorization that was done in the 2008 study. There's no change there. We're not starting from scratch, so call it an update. Many of the recommendations from the previous study are now implemented, so we have to reassess to see what the priorities are in the system. In the aviation industry, technology has changed, notably air service for passengers has changed, cargo is changing, Amazon now has their own airplane. That's going to change the dynamic. UAS, of course, is entering the market, so it's a new branch of aviation, so to speak. And then when we take the economic impact study that was done in 2014, we're going to simplify that, make it less academic and more in terms of layman's terms. Okay, so how is the information used? We gather the information for the airports, use facilities and services, look at all the infrastructure and their attributes, identify gaps and deficiencies in the current system. So if we say an airport needs a runway of 5,000 feet, and an airport needs 800 feet, they have a 200-foot deficiency in runway length. We just identify that in solution for the category of airports and then each airport. We establish actions and projects needed to enhance the system, so basically we come up with a list, and then we come up with a cost. Just briefly, the system plan process, we've done the inventory, we're working on the demand projections, you have the airport roles chapter. We're in the middle of system performance, that is, we look at the geographic coverage that the airports provide, and we'll show some slides about that, and then the individual airport performance. Also looking at what we call special considerations. So we're looking at airport resiliency and related to emergency management around the state. You know, if there's a Cascadia event, which airports could support that activity for recovery. Also have a land use policy analysis that we have a draft and we're close to budgeting that up. And then the economic impact, our recommendations, and the costs.
Can I stop you for just one
yes.
second? On the resiliency and Cascadia piece, the state's gotten a lot more serious about responding to Cascadia, and so we've been involved with Mike Harriman, who's the governor's emergency response coordinator and OEM, on identifying which airports and how we might be able to assist in a Cascadia type event at the coastal airports and the valley airports.
And that's been real. I think we have a map here. It'll be interesting. You can see how airports contribute to emergency. So here's the airport system, and also the Connect Oregon regions. There's five regions, of course, which do play a role. We can take the information that we analyze, we can break it out by region or for the state. But basically, you know, you have airports along the interstate corridor, of course, many airports in the Portland Metro, along the coast, Eastern Oregon, Central Oregon, you know, a little scattered as you get out to the high desert. This is your entire system. And then the inventory looked at the base aircraft, annual operations, annual claimants. We take that information for forecasting purposes, but also for the services that are available. It's important to note which airports have services, which ones have credit card fuel pumps, which ones have jet A, fuel, aviation activities for emergency management, Coast Guard, wildfire fighting. And then, of course, the airport infrastructure, the nuts and bolts of what makes the airports run, which one makes them successful in their aviation services. Projections, again, look at the enplanements, base aircraft, and four types of operations. We break the operations into four groups. Here's an example from the general aviation aircraft operations forecast. Socioeconomic data for growth rates and compare that with FAA growth rates. So the FAA has a national growth rate for hours flown at 0.9%, so we have to apply that growth rate to the 1.6 million annual operations that took place in 2015. So we look at the per capita real growth, growth domestic product growth rate of the state. So that's growing faster than the population. And so we use that growth rate as a measure, and then we also have a population for each Connect Oregon region. It's kind of a bottom-up approach. So we have a range of growth, and then we'll work with Jeff and Mitch and Heather and say, okay, which is the preferred growth rate? We have our suggestions, but they may know something that I don't. So. This is your airport system broken out by the five categories of airports. You know, a lot of the remote access airports, you know, are in the Cascade Mountains, so it's in this high desert area. You get along the coast, you get a real smattering of different types of airports. And then also in the metro area, wide variety of airports. And those can change as we go through the process. So that's the way they stand today. So, for example, in the role chapter that you have, each category has its own criteria for infrastructure and services that airports. So for the category two, which are category two is regional. Urban category. Category two. So you know the ARC, the airport reference codes need to be a C2. And 5,000 feet of runway. So we take that group and say, okay, of all the 13 airports in category two, 80% meet the runway. So that comes up with a scorecard for the group, and then we have a scorecard for each airport as well. So this is my favorite part of the geographic coverage, because I was a geography major in college. So, so we look at the GIS analysis and we say, okay, how much of the population is served by the categories of airports and also each individual airport? We look at a 30-minute drive time around the airport for general aviation and commercial airports. But we also do a 120-minute drive time around the commercial airports. Sarah, in her previous presentation, used a 60-minute. We use a 120-minute because it also includes air cargo, and air cargo trucks will go out from an airport easily, 2-hour drive. Facility analysis includes deficiencies by the airports and the categories, and then the scorecards being the next step. Here's an example of system performance. These are the general aviation airports, categories 2 to 5. Okay, so no commercial airports here. So the analysis from the 30-minute drive time, the population served is 86% of Oregonians live within 30 minutes of these categories of the general aviation airports. And then 29% of the land area is covered. So you got a lot of white space with very few people living, and it's rural, or it's forested. So, you know, it's a good snapshot of where the service is. You know, basically, your population, of course, is heavily concentrated. You've got 4 million people in the state, and a lot are in the Portland metro area. Just take it in consideration, out-of-state airports, because they compete for airports aviation services with Oregon airports. So we also did GIS analysis for the same caliber of airports. These are general aviation airports surrounding the state. And they only serve 5% of the land area, but about 23% of the population. That's because just across the river here, Vancouver, and they have an airport that cuts in, their service area cuts into downtown Portland, right? Here's our 120-minute drive time analysis for Oregon airports, for the commercial service airports. So the darker shaded areas are overlaps in service. So, you know, Salem is in this area, this corridor, Corvallis, Eugene, Portland, they overlap easily, right? In that 120-minute drive time. There's others that overlap. Like Klamath Falls and Medford, but there's some mountain ranges between the two, so it kind of psychologically, it's not really easy to drive that 120 minutes to get from one airport to the other. So some overlapping markets, but there's also individual markets that serve the market well. Klamath is working on it. Then we take a look at the out-of-state airports. We throw Boise in the mix, so they're capturing some of the market. So when we compare, you know, 91% now, when you throw the out-of-state airports in, so just Tri-Cities and Boise, then you're covering 92.2% of the population. And then we have land area coverage of 58%. So the out-of-state airports do provide services, and we will have some leakage to those airports for passenger service. But the bulk of the market is served by Oregon airports. Okay, so the economic impact study was completed in 2014. We've updated some of the findings. We took some general aviation operations numbers and massaged those to more current levels. So, but basically, you know, your system, and the majority is going to be Portland in this number. But about $29 billion in economic impact, that includes the multiplier effect, and Portland is about 75% of that. Over 200,000 jobs.
28.8 billion is a tough number to defend. Can you help me maybe offline with the methodology that you got to that number? Or the, I guess it's a previous.
It's the direct impact on airport, and then as employees spend money in the local economy, it helps create more jobs. as businesses on the airport spend money.
It's bigger than agriculture in the state.
I think the worry is we may have overextended and say, you know, Jimmy made a dollar at the airport, so he that contributed to growth in, you know, areas.
Yeah.
It may have overextended.
Okay. We're just wrapping up the land use analysis. We've surveyed the majority of jurisdictions in the state that are in proximity of an airport. And we worked with Angelo. They did a lot of survey work for us. Where the jurisdictions didn't respond to the survey, we went out and gathered the data ourselves by looking at ordinances, zoning ordinances for each jurisdiction, for each county, developed a large database. This will help ODA in the future say, okay, you have an airport project, but we need some help from you. What we need is you need to protect this airport by updating your ordinances. So Jeff will have a large database with every jurisdiction that's in proximity of an airport, and be able to identify which ones have ordinances in place, which ones do not. So be very useful to it. So basically what we found is about 28% not have policies in place for their comprehensive plan. That's by law, they need to have an airport zoning in their comprehensive plan. 23 don't have the airport safety overlay zone in their development code, which is different than the comprehensive plan. 28% lack height restrictions surrounding airports. But we did find that compared to 2007, there's a 10% increase in communities with height zoning. So there's been an improvement in the last 10 years. Also on the special considerations, aviation system resiliency. Coast Guard bases, air ambulance, wildfire fighting all play a key role in the social welfare of the state of Oregon, protecting property and individuals and people. And then airports at risk database is what we're developing now. Basically, we use Dogami, which is the geology mining agency, I guess, Oregon. They have very good data on GIS, and we're able to identify which airports fall in the hazard zones, which ones are out. And we're able to analyze those airports that will be near the coast but are outside the zone. There's about 10 airports along the coast that won't be flooded, or nature can do it whatever it wants. But based on the Dogami analysis, we were able to find 10 airports that are outside that area. So these are the airports that have emergency services. Some have combination of services, such as air ambulance and aerial firefighting tanker bases located there. This is for the firefighting areas, and it's kind of a minimum look. These are the ones with the actual bases, but other airports can utilize on an as-need basis. So depending on the fire season, you know, they can be based at an airport that doesn't have facilities. So they can be based in Christmas Valley or Sun River or something like that. Just temporarily move in, put an aircraft in for a couple weeks, and they'll fly it back. Air cargo connectivity is really important to the economy. It really ties a local community with not only e-commerce, but also for medical supplies to come in and out of the state. So most of the cargo is on, of course, UPS, FedEx, DHL, and now Amazon has a plane coming in to the Seattle, Portland market. They share that airplane. So they come into Portland, and they have feeder aircraft that spoke out from Portland. So we analyzed IFR data from the FAA, and we're able to ascertain which markets have regularly scheduled overnight flights. A lot of these don't represent just one airline, so like DHL may be serving to Marco and Eugene from Portland. But it's mainly FedEx and UPS providing the service. They're utilizing Cessna Caravans. It's pretty much a FedEx aircraft. ATR 43 goes from Medford to Portland. They'll tag that with another market. We saw, like, in Newport, they'll have a direct flight in the morning on AmeriFlight, which is UPS. On the way back, they stop at Salem and then into Portland. That's because on the West Coast, I used to be a scheduler for DHL, so I get excited about this. But on the West Coast, the planes arrive really early in the morning compared to the East Coast of the United States because of where the hubs are located. So they get great service in the morning. The plane stops here by 6 a.m., they can truck just about to the entire Portland metro area. But in the afternoon, the plane has to leave pretty early at a really early cutoff time. So they stop in Salem, pick up cargo because of traffic and because of the short cutoff time. They have to leave around 7 p.m., pretty early in the business day. Like in New York, you can have a cutoff time as late as 10 p.m. because that's entry benefits in the evening, but it's hurt in the morning because the planes aren't good until 9 a.m. So what happens is the planes fly in, they smoke out, they sit out here all day, drivers collect materials, and they put the ground packages back on the plane and head back to Portland. Okay, so as far as scheduling, we are about halfway through the process. We've been collecting data, analyzing it, and now we'll be starting to crank out a lot more reports. So be expecting chapters. The forecast chapter is right now 70 pages, so beware. It's a lot of tables and graphs, though. Be quicker.
And our goal is not to overload the board, so either one chapter or two chapters per board session. And depending on the technical aspect of the chapter, like economic, may just be just one detail. The two that you have now, they're nice softballs. It kind of gets you warmed up of beginning the process. So don't think we're just going to hear. So here's 100 pages, you have a month to get your conference back. So. We want to be aware of the board's time commitment to communication.
Okay, so the next steps, we're going to continue on the system performance, geographic analysis, and then efficiency analysis. Find out which airports are falling short, standards that are presented there, as well as check. Further down the road, it's coming up with a list of projects, and I'll break that down on time. And then which ones are priorities. And then we like to think of this product for you, for ODA, for any aeronautical or aviation group in that state. We do a number of these. And it's a sword and a shield. And this will give Mitch a sword saying, look, FAA, our system plan says this is a project, this is real. It also will help you have a shield basically saying, if someone comes up with a very aggressive master plan and a very aggressive forecast, and they want to extend Brookings Airport's runway from 2,500 or whatever it is to 5,000 feet, it'll cost $50 million. This will give you a shield saying, look, this is not our system. So that's just one way to look at this as a tool for you to take with you and up to Salem, you know, when you have meetings and so forth, it gives you some advantages in your budgets.
So one of the areas we can use this and have used it in the past, in addition to the five-year CIP that the FAA puts out, is this forms the foundation for approving Connect Oregon aviation projects. So that we can look at this and say, here's a need in the state, this checks off one of those needs in the state, or this is on the Oregon Aviation Plan. That's something that needs to be done.
Yeah, we just need to get back to that thing.
Oh, there's news on that too. They may have a second year of non-competitive Connect Oregon because the state only bonded $30 million and they've obligated $61 million. If the privilege tax gets disapproved at the ballot box, then they'll go back to having to use the Connect Oregon bonded money to pay for those earmarked projects.
All right, stand by.
See where that goes. Sorry.
Any questions?
No, it's an exciting process. I mean, this really does, it's the foundation of all 97 airports, you know, projects across the state. Big, big project.
Yeah, and it's a great tool to compare master plans with the system plan because it uses its balance.
The two things that are in this one that weren't in the previous one is the emphasis on cascading and also the freight plan. I can use that information. We're the ABA's representative on the freight advisory committee for the state. It helps us to know which airports are cargo airports.
Yeah, you know, we may want to take that information, Steve, because does this affect the whole airport? So, Hermiston, the general aviation airport, has an EPS plan. That's a pretty that's a huge
point.
Just done this all over the country. And to have a small general aviation airport support the EPS plan is a big deal. So, that might be something you want to consider when you goals or recommendations.
So our role is to please review Chapter 2 and 4. I will send out both of these electronically to the court in case you want to do it on a Word document. However you want to write it, type it, scribble it, doesn't matter. But the next one
is
to get some
PDF. Pardon? The PDF, I think.
I think we have Word as well.
Okay.
But we'll make it happen.
We got them already, Chris.
Yeah,
we already have them.
Okay.
Yeah.
In Section 13 of the reading.
Oh, I think you also need
it. Yeah. Oh, I wanted to let
you know. Electronically, it's PDF, there's a sticky note function in Adobe.
Right. You just want general comments or questions?
Whatever you come up with, you know, questions and comments, thoughts, however.
Okay.
There is a UAS section, too.
Yeah.
What's unmanned? It should be written already, right? Sorry to take
this. We just like to see the official breakout of categories of our general aviation airports, so it's nice to see that you get a little bit more finer, granular data into those type airports.
Yeah. And if there's a question, like, how did we get this, you know, you respond back to you. It may not be incorporated into the document, but at least you have the question. This is the worst rule of one of the biggest policy documents that this agency has. So,
does this more on the policy side? You said it's going to be rolled up in an Oregon bigger transportation package. Is this done in a in a stovepipe as just the aviation side, or does any of this lean into sort of the other modalities of transportation as well, sort of in formulating the policy?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna second that with, you would think that would be a good thing, but sometimes it can bite you in the ass. And one, I'll give you the Connect Oregon grant for one issue. One project for us, we may say UPS is at this one little airport and it's moving cargo, and we think to help that out, it should get this grant. And then we say, well, since it's also freight, let's go. It's moving onto a rail line, which is right next to the airport. Let's have rail go evaluate it, and they'll join in with us. Well, when rail evaluates the amount of freight, they rate this little UPS project down at the very bottom. So we may rate it as number one. The freight advisory comes in and rates it at number 10. It gets totally kicked out of the Connect process because the average ranking is 5. It's out.
So, this is an ongoing fight that we've had with the Freight Advisory Committee, is aviation will never compete with rail or ports for freight in gross tonnage. It's in the expeditious nature and the value of the cargo. So if you've got a bunch of rail folks on the acts and they're on the Freight Advisory Committee, sometimes you get multiple votes that don't go aviation's way. So if you're not a freight airport in a big way, it's really not good to be evaluated as a freight airport, because then we get ranked very low, and they rate the Freight Advisory Committee ranking equal to a mode and equal to a region, which I've objected to from day one, but that's the way that they've taken to, and they try to be fair, but when you're comparing the gross tonnage of a tanker or a freight car or a bunch of freight cars, it's really tough for aviation to compete. Because it's hard to imagine that something small can have significant value that affects other things. But the just-in-time, overnight nature of FedEx and UPS is what's important.
Yeah, what they're carrying is important because they're carrying medical supplies, artificial hips and knees, and the value of those are immense. The entire universe, all freight in the world, 40% of the value of this air cargo, that's only 2% of the weight.
My big objection has been, even if it's not a freight project, if they get FedEx at that airport, they consider it to be evaluated by freight, which I think is wrong.
A ton of wheat versus a ton of iPhones.
Yeah.
Both ways the same. But value is obviously
wrong. Yeah. I'll watch to see if I can inject on then. And just as these reports come out, to figure out how to inject. Because I think one of the things that we have to look at going forward is it's all going to get more and more interconnected. You know, we can't think of aviation in its own sector anymore. I mean, granted, the airports and things like that are always going to be there, but, you know, we as a society in the next 10 years, we have to think things a little bit differently. But it's beyond the scope of this. I'll just look for it as the reports come out and see if I can inject.
And if you have questions like outside the chapters, please contact Heather Mitch.
Yep.
And we can answer your questions, because hopefully you will have questions that don't specifically relate to Chapter 2. And that's good. So as we go through this, what about this? Maybe if we haven't gotten to that point yet, we can incorporate the thoughts into the report. So don't just limit yourself to the documents, but we want comments on the documents. But if you have something else, please contact Mitch and Heather, and we'll take it from there.
One last thing. Sorry to interrupt. The Freight Advisory Committee is looking for a private industry freight representative. I would love to have one from aviation. If anybody in the room knows somebody who's in private freight aviation.
Can you think of somebody?
I'll check.
That would be awesome, Jake.
Within the state?
Within the state, yeah.
Here's a trade organization called the Regional Air Cargo Association, RACA.
Yep.
And guys, the director of that is last week, Bernstein. It's a national organization, but Ameriflight is out here a lot, so they may have a rep.
I'd love to get a contact from them.
Yeah.
If not, I want to refer them.
Okay, so very big project. I appreciate starting off with the data collection. It kind of gets us in. It's very cut or dry, so I appreciate that. Any questions before on the process or anything overall for the aviation plan update? All right. Thank you very much. We look forward to seeing you over and over and over again. All right. I just wondered if we could do, I know we have to do an executive session to talk about some projects at Bannon. But I was just wondering, because I promised that we'd talk a little bit about what some of the core grants that we're looking at. Can we just flip those up? And if there's any briefings that you want to give us on any particular projects.
That's your turn.
All right.
So I'll give you the Cliff Notes version, unless you want the full version, that's true.
Cliff Notes, fine.
Okay. So, specifically, I know one of the concerns that you brought up, Madam Chair, was the budget piece, and I think that's the Aviation System Action Program in general. So I'm going to touch on that, and then we're going to talk very briefly about very briefly about the Aviation Review Committee review and recommendations and sort of the next steps. So specifically on the ASAP financial snapshot, so CORE right now has a total of $3.4 rounded down million dollars. The rural pot of money is about 1.7, and so is the state-owned airport's pot of money, about 1.7. To date, CORE has about $1.4 million in encumbrances, meaning we've set that aside and saying we're going to spend it. We haven't spent all of it, but we've spent a pretty good chunk, about $280,000 in reimbursements on the 2016 cycle projects. To date, we have $1.76 million for the 2017 cycle for 2018. And the ROAR pot currently has about $1.7 million, as I said. Expenditures to date right now are $82,000, and we've got remaining encumbrance of about $136,000. So right now, about $1.5 million remaining on that.
And then the reason we have so much ROAR money outstanding is we're waiting for the project, the study to finish, then the RFAs, and then we'll initiate funding. So because ROAR dollars have to be spent, providing commercial service to rural airports, so that we're a little bit delayed in getting the rural monies out.
So as far as the SOAR projects right now, same amount of money, $1.7 million, again, rounded down. The expenditures to date is right about the $500,000 mark. but Matt's got about $1.3 million in encumbrances. And after that, the balance will be, $1.13 million. And the balance after encumbrances is going to be about $80,000. So Matt's got more of the specifics on exactly what the SOAR projects have done at what airports, but there has been drawdown on those. Total administrative costs between fiscal year 15-17, about $300,000. The 17 and 19 costs is about 97. The big cue on the 15-17 was the software, if I'm not mistaken. So that was a pretty big expense in that first fiscal year. So kind of fast and furious, but that's sort of what the finances look like right now. If you want to dive into any more specificity, I'll tee it over to Kristen because she can answer that with a lot more specificity. But
has Pendleton submitted a proposal on
Pendleton never submitted, no.
Did they just decide not to, or
they couldn't get an airline? They couldn't get Boutique to buy into what they wanted to do, so they pulled back the application. And I think they were having second thoughts about doing it anyway. The company that they were planning to use is using their own charter to fly people back and forth to Pendleton from.
So they solved their own problem.
They sort of solved their own problem, but what it didn't do was to give them the ability to leverage that flight to bring additional companies up there, because they're all Airbus specific.
That's
coming
up.
Thank
you.
Mitch, it's interesting that a flight between Pendleton and San Jose goes directly over John Day and 5 minutes away from Baker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's the time and the fuel on climb out, I think, is the showstopper for that. I don't think they want to make additional stops.
So the specifics for the 2018 cycle, we had a good amount of applications. We did have airports that did not apply last year, actually apply this year. We had some airports that were not successful in the economic development category reapply. That was built into the software so they could carry the data forward. We did take all of the applications from last year, dump it into the software. It was an amazingly awesome task to do, but we did it. And we were successful in having airports carry that forward. As you can see, we're better than halfway through the process. The Aviation Review Committee met last week on the 11th.
And that Aviation Review Committee is made up from members of the local area commissions on transmission. So they're all local representatives that are deciding what projects to push forward here for our grid.
And I think it's important, thank you for bringing that up, Madam Chair, and I think it's important at the Aviation, or at the Area Commission on Transportation level, it's jurisdictionally blind, and each individual application is weighted only on its own. So they don't weight them against each other in the individual act. They have three quantitative questions and three qualitative questions that are based on the statutory review. So they weigh them individually. They're not ranked against each other at the act level. We take those combined scores, create a final score, and then at the second portion, which is the Aviation Review Committee or ARC, that's when they do the actual ranking. So thank you for the clarification.
And what they actually do is break ties.
That's correct. Again, we're familiar with the priorities, AIP first, then aviation safety and infrastructure, and then economic development. The categories, we went through that just a minute ago in the aviation plan. Again, the ARC met to review, consider the application information, the base scores, and then break ties in priorities 1, 2, and 3, knowing that we probably will not have enough money in this program this year to fund priorities 1 fully, 2 at all, or 3 at all at this point.
Okay.
They still continue to break the ties and qualify the applications for approval, not funding, approval.
So of note, the first cycle, you all as a board approved all of priority 1, all of priority 2, and got into priority 3. But without a competitive Connect Oregon project, we had a lot more applications this time. So we're going to get to that.
So just a reminder, these are the statutory considerations. This statute will change as of January 1st. We were grandfathered in because the cycle completed before the effective date of House Bill 2017. The new language in 2017 added the seventh requirement. There is some discussion about potentially pulling in this criteria into our own statutory language as they finalize and carry over House Bill 2017 or 2075 to a full-time thing, but that's still in the future. Quick snapshot, 58 applications for a total request of $5.9 million. Priority 1 had 24 applications at $2.1 million. Priority 2 had 6 applications for $710,000. And a big push in Priority 3 with 28 applications and over $3 million in requests.
And to review, one is grant match for FAA grants, two is resiliency projects, and three is economic development.
So we got about $1.8 million. So as you can see, I don't like to do math in public, but I'm pretty sure I'm safe to say that 1.8 is not 2.1. So do with that as you will. Realistically speaking, as things shuffle out, we're going to probably fund the first 22 projects. I'm not going to show you the rollout yet because we're not there. We'll bring that to the actual board meeting for the consideration, but we're probably the first 22 projects are going to likely get funded. This is small, so I apologize for that, but this is the full 24 projects of Priority 1. The cutoff, tentatively right now, would be a project for Redmond. Again, this is tentative. We don't know exactly where the money is going to play out. Recognizing that all of these requests are probably a little bit over, that was done because the market last year changed so substantially that many airports were left with having to put more money into the system because of the cost of everything that just went.
So Jeff
was very wise in his conversations during the joint planning conferences to say, look, overbid just a little bit. And so we're looking really good on these projects. Priority 2, again, about $710,000. Priority 3, we got a lot, a little over $3 million here. You should have the materials in front of you, so I'm not going to try to suss these out. But again, a lot of returns on these, which is really good. And it's continuing to tell the story about the needs and economic development for projects the FAA won't cover. So, real quick, the milestone progress report, it's on the compliance end of the system. We've struggled a little bit in terms of getting the reports from the airports. A lot of that is because they think we're micromanaging the system, and my response to that is yes. Because we have extreme auditing restraints, and we have to be able to tell the story throughout the entire process. So now that we've migrated the form into eGrants, it's going to go live hopefully the first part of next month. It'll cue them to say either I have one, they need to fill out the report, or there's nothing to report. At which point, if they get 7 months down the line and submit a request for reimbursement, and I've got seven nothings to report, I'm going to say liar, liar, pants on fire. I got 7 months worth of invoices here. Why weren't you reporting? It's all keeping up with grant assurances and make sure they're doing what they need to be doing and making sure that we're really good stewards of the money being put forth in this program, because it is a very limited amount of money. One of the things moving forward, last year we set the effective date of the agreements as of the board date. We're going to continue to do that. It seems like a good practice. The big shift between last year and this year in terms of the FAA IP grants is, instead of executing immediately once it's approved, we're going to wait until the airports actually have the grant in hand. This does two things. One, it ensures that the FAA, the airport actually gets the grant before we give them an executed grant with nothing to support it. But it also is going to reduce or eliminate the need for change orders on milestones. So we do change orders only for milestones, or very limited scope changes, so long as the budget is not increased. We will do budget reductions, but never budget increases. We've had that question asked, and we say, thank you for playing, but this is where you're at.
That's the same rules for Connect Oregon. You can't change the scope.
Increase the rate. So this is going to really make sure that, again, we're being great stewards of the program. You know, if the project falls off and they don't get their Fed grant, well, sorry, you know, we're not going to execute a core grant because things happen, right? The Fed's changed the goalposts a little bit and move the project, and it is what it is. But we're not going to hold money over for that because it's something like that. We'll carry it over to the next year. So real quick, the next steps, again, the 11-12 AXMET, we're going to bring to the State Aviation Board probably in February. We're hoping at the WAMA conference with the same exact as last year. Bring it to WAMA, we'll consider it. The Aviation Board does have the opportunity right now to go into the system, and you all received your logins, I believe, back in November, if not the later part of October.
you've got your password, let me know, I'll reset it. But it's really simple. You have access to every bit of material that has been submitted. You log in, you go to your homepage, hit My Applications, select your 2018. This has been logged in since 11, and it's still going to work. That's awesome. Select 2018 in the drop-down, and it should... Well, okay, it's gonna fall asleep on me. It should give you the list of all of the applications, so you should be able to see exactly everything that's been submitted. You can do your own review of it rather than sending out a bunch of packets, because some of these packets are pretty large. They submit a lot of background material. So, Fast and Furious, I covered a lot. I went quickly. I apologize if I talked too fast, but in the interest of time, I wanted to make sure I got you as much as I could. So.
Appreciate it.
I'll entertain any questions or comments.
The good thing, this is our second year, so we're finally kind of figuring out exactly what's happening, so I think we're getting used to it. So.
Great.
Any questions?
And so we expect the next round of core grants to hit the board for approval.
So this round should be next month.
Next month.
We should have these prepared. Naomi and I are finalizing a staff report right now, which is essentially just, hey, don't forget, and here's your instructions on how to get on the website. But it's really simple. You should be able to just go in, click on the My Applications, draw it down, look at whatever applications you want to look at. You'll have the opportunity to see. We'll send out all of the score sheets, so that way you can see exactly how they flesh out. But, Your ACT folks are really, really good. They understand the climate of the communities. They understand what the specific area commission on transportation. The conversation was substantive. It was good. And it was very well thought out in terms of the projects and understanding just exactly what the limitations are to what the supply is. So
they also expressed an interest in helping to make sure that this program doesn't sunset.
Right.
As you all know, it sunsets in about 4 more years. So I think it's important to keep it going.
Well, I really appreciated the whole concept you guys had of getting the area commissions on transportation involved on vetting the projects, giving us their feedback on which ones they considered important, and then taking representatives, forming that aviation review committee, and letting them really chew into this before we ever really look. That just worked out really, really well.
So Heather, Matt, and Naomi did a lot of really great legwork getting this program.
Based on my experience from last year on the Corps and being on the ACT, I'm not going to pull up anything. It's a really good process. I don't need to review anything. It's pretty well vetted.
We were at the majority of the ACT meetings this year. I mean, we were all at the state. Naomi took a drive down all the way to practically Nevada to go to a meeting, and I was in a bunch on the west side and up north and everything. So the ACTs have found that valuable, and we utilized the time to be there. The biggest takeaway we got out of that was, we've got a good program, but we're putting a very small plug in a very big hole of aviation funding right now. So.
Okay. So with that, we're going to push the financial into the next meeting. She gets to start off first then next time.
Okay.
And with that, we need to talk about Bandon a little bit. Yes, go ahead.
I have a comment that could be very important.
You
bet. So I'll just do it now. Yesterday, the Coast Guard announced their UAS policy. And I think there's an opportunity with IPV to get connected with the Coast Guard. I remember the Navy, they can have contacts with Portland, Sector Portland. And I think in terms of investing, especially the Coast Guard, there could be a real good synergy between the Department and the IPV and the Coast Guard.
Everything with the IPP, because federal agencies can't be part of it. But I think there's a real important role to play with our interaction with Coast Guard.
They'll now start doing some testing. Just think of the advantage of the U.S. to go out and drop a buoy or a life raft or rescue somebody. Yeah. The larger ones can tow a ship. They can do surveillance. And go beyond.
Especially in extreme weather conditions, you wouldn't have to risk there. And that would be awesome.
Yeah.
They did that yesterday. There was an article. News article about that. They dropped a life raft to some kids in the surf in Australia, I think it was yesterday.
And we need those positive things.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'll send you the notes that I got.
Yeah, let me see it.
It's just a two-page.
Okay. Super. Well, I appreciate all the good work and all the attendance today. We're going to talk about band a little bit as projects, and with that, I'm going to need to read a little bit. The Oregon Department of Aviation will now meet in executive session pursuant to ORS 192662-8, which allows the Aviation Board to meet in executive session to deliberate real property transactions. Representatives of the news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the audience are asked to leave the room. Representatives of the news media are specifically directed not to report on or otherwise disclose any of the deliberations or anything said about these subjects during the executive session, except to state the general subject of the session as previously announced. No decisions will be made in executive session. At the end of the executive session, we will return to open session and welcome the audience back in the room. Basically, we're just going to come back into open session and then close the session.
Well, there's going to be a vote on SOAR projects after executive session.
Then we're going to come back in. We're going to vote on SOAR projects.
So what is going on with Ben? I mean, until you go into session.
We're going to talk about it in executive session.
But what? I
mean, when we come back after executive session, we'll talk about it.
We're not hiding anything.
Oh, I know. I'm just
discuss purchasing property.
You're purchasing property?
Yes.
All right.
That's what I need to know.
So give us 10 minutes, and we'll be back in session.
What's that
doing? What's that doing?